No, you tell it.
No, you.
I'm not telling it.
You should totally tell it.
Well, you should tell it.
No, you tell it. Hello. No, You Tell It is a series that switches up the storytelling. So each performer writes a true life tale and then, switching with a partner, performs the other person's story, giving everyone involved the chance to share their own stories and experience someone else's. Something fun we like to do at our live shows is to ask the author a personal question before their partner reads their story. Kicking off part two of our Three Strikes show, Jen Waring performs Daniel Mahler's true life tale of an adolescent romance that is perhaps more bitter than sweet. Before she does, let's listen in on our Q&A with Dan.
My question for you, Dan, is we met and talked about Know You Tell It and you came to see one of the shows. So what was it that drew you to want to do this, and did we meet your expectations?
Ooh, that's great.
What you thought the process was going to be and your experience.
So we were actually just right before part two started having a conversation about this. I think what really attracted me to it is the fact that it's somebody else reading your story and then you're reading somebody else's. I think I would be terrified of having to read my own story, but there's like something really beautiful about the trust that I'm putting in Jen and the trust that Jen is putting in me. Right, and so that's another part of it, is that there's like kind of a pressure, like Jen's going to read mine and then I'm going to feel like I really want to do her story justice, which is going to, I think, push me to like work hard and to try to make sure that I am doing it justice. So that process to me felt really beautiful, and yeah, it definitely has met my expectations. It's been a very like emotional, vulnerable, in a nice way kind of experience.
Yay!
Woo!
A plus.
And with that, we will be hearing What to Do with a Rusty Nail, written by Daniel Mahler and performed by Jen Waring.
Yes. Who hopefully will do it the justice he just talked about. Okay, sorry. What to Do with a Rusty Nail. The names in this story have been changed. I also want you to know, as far as I'm concerned, it ends well. Strike one. Patricia and I started off as your typical high school romance. We met in drama club, we flirted at a birthday party, she wrote her number on my hand in Sharpie and insisted, "But you have to call me tomorrow at the latest. None of this at least 2 days bullshit. Way too traditional." Well, sorry, Patricia, I did wait 2 days. A mistake she was quick to point out. It went smoothly at first. We were two weirdo drama kids against the world, and we had a lot of fun. Our favorite thing to do was to get cheap Chinese takeout and watch reality dating shows on MTV. We were even voted best couple in our drama club's yearbook. She was intense, Patricia. She knew what she wanted and what she believed, and I respected her deeply for that. In addition to knowing herself, Patricia always knew what was best for me. Even though she was a year younger than me, she was way more mature. A year after we started dating, I went to college, a liberal arts school in Pennsylvania. They had a strong theater program, which attracted me to the school, and the people seemed great. I made friends quickly, people I could relate to, fellow drama weirdos, just like Patricia and I had been. I was going to be a drama major. Patricia was still in high school, but we vowed that we would continue to make things work. But there were a lot of things I did at college that she didn't approve of. My new friends, for example. Patricia was convinced they were holding me back, and she was right. They were immature and selfish. Most of them were girls, which bothered her. She came to visit me once, and we all went out to dinner in the campus dining hall. About a week later, I went to check my email to see if I had gotten in a play I auditioned for. I had an email from Patricia. February 12th, 2007. "I'm jealous that you're friends with all those brain-dead girls. I found them unwelcoming and weird. How the hell do you expect to grow when you surround yourself with people like that?" She knows me better than I know myself. And she sees that these friends are not good for me. She must be right. Of course, they wouldn't understand that. I couldn't tell them that she disapproved. So I started making excuses as to why I couldn't see them, and eventually when they caught on, I defended my actions using the language Patricia gave me. Patricia also disliked that I was a theater major. "I'm annoyed that you're in love with theater. I find it stupid." What the hell can anyone do with a theater degree? I guess theater was kind of selfish. Maybe I should pull back from it a little. I, I, didn't get into that play anyway. She did love me, after all. She had to. I'm so sorry. This email sounds so mean. And I bet you think I'm angry. I love you so much. I love your passion for life and the arts. Please don't take these things to offense. I know they hurt your feelings. You needed to know, though. I miss you, and my heart is breaking every moment I am without you. This was her pattern, and it was good for me. I needed her. We were both facing a lot of pressure, and she was my guiding light. I imagine it was hard for her to tell me all that stuff. I loved getting a slap in the face from her every once in a while. I began to understand that all of my choices were either right or wrong. And I would often make the misguided wrong choice. That's what Patricia was there for. To fix me. To guide me when I fucked up. We did almost break up several times, but we always managed to hang on. We were so good for each other. Breaking up was never really an option. Patricia, September 26th, 2006. I want you to say that there's no getting out of this relationship. That you would chain yourself to me before I'd even think of letting you go.
What?
It was because of her that I actually began to look at other schools to transfer to. As far as I was concerned, theater was out as a career option. So I looked for schools that offered different career paths. I was always pretty good at science. Maybe I could try that instead. Strike two. It was late one night when Patricia called me. There had been a thunderstorm, and I remember feeling that the lightning mirrored the electric feeling in my heart from an amazing theater production I had seen at my school. What's wrong? I have something to tell you, she said in tears. Okay, what's going on? I think I might be bisexual. Boom. Just like that. I had been struggling with questions of my own sexuality for as long as I could remember. I'd had plenty of girlfriends, sure, but there was always this thing. So in that moment, when Patricia said that, it was like that cloud suddenly lifted. All of a sudden, this big, scary demon had transformed into something manageable. It was out there, and I didn't even have to be the one to bring it up. That's okay, I said. Hey, you know what? I think I might be bisexual too. This was going to be it. We were about to understand each other in a new and beautiful way. Silence. I'd fucked up now. I could hear it in her voice. Anyone who's been in this type of relationship will know that you become really good at picking up subtle clues of anger. You become trained for it. It's self-preservation. If you can identify the warning signs, you maybe have a chance of avoiding the blowout. But it was too late for that now. I had lied to her. I've been keeping the secret from her all along, which made me an unfaithful boyfriend and an untrustworthy friend. All this time, she had tried so hard to convince all of her friends that I was straight, to convince herself that I was straight, that I really did love her. I do love you, Patricia. This has nothing to do with you. This has everything to do with me. I'm your girlfriend. You're such a coward. You couldn't even tell me yourself. You had to wait for me to say it first. It was so hard for me to work up the courage to tell you this. And then the minute I do, you just tack yourself onto my news, using me to get this off your chest. The conversation went on. Later that night, I took a long walk in the post-storm clarity. It was strange to feel so free and so utterly trapped at the same time. The months following that phone conversation were some of the hardest I ever had. It involved Patricia and I breaking up and getting back together at least twice. There were some fun times. Instead of watching reality dating shows, we watched The L Word together. Instead of cheap Chinese takeout, we would visit cheap porn stores and call it research. There were definitely times when I felt wholeheartedly supported by her. "This is your journey," she sometimes said. "Just let me go on it with you." Maybe it was just a phase. Maybe Patricia and I had a love that transcended gay or straight. How could I let go of something as precious as her? I would surely regret it. May 5th, 2007. "You really kind of fucked me up. No joke. I have no idea what to do. I can't hear anything about your boy fantasies. They make me want to puke. I'm not ready for that. I kind of want to kill you, but I love you." "I feel a lot of angst towards gay people, but I'm trying not to be a discriminative and awful shit. I kind of want to tear you apart, but I want to hold you. I feel very angry, but I feel very excited. I feel very alone, but I feel very adventurous. Let's stop being drama queens. You stupid head, you have no idea what you're leaving behind. That's your deal, though. Mwah. Love you, Patricia. P.S. You have to be prepared for my mood swings. You broke my heart. So I'm going to be excited one minute and pissed the next. Then I might cry. But if you love me, you'll be willing to help me through that." Strike three. After Patricia and I had settled the gay matter, things evened out for a while. We even had a beautiful moment of closure where we forgave each other for the sins of our past and vowed to charge ahead with this new relationship, something less than lovers, but more than friends. I was eventually able to fully come out, and she did as well. I created a new, safer version of the story to tell my friends. "Oh yeah, we dated for a while, and then we realized we were both gay. Now we're best friends. Isn't that so charming?" There was still something off, though. Whenever Patricia called me and I saw her name on my phone, I would feel a jolt of something horrible. Fight or flight. I felt so guilty about that. I was such a bad friend. After all that she had done for me, all that she had forgiven me for, why was I so afraid of her? Eventually, Patricia got a job as an advocate with a, get this, LGBT partner abuse organization. She heard about the job from her then-roommate, Rachel, who also worked with this organization. And through Patricia, I became friends with Rachel, too. As the year went on, Rachel and Patricia's relationship began to go downhill pretty fast. I watched it deteriorate, and I became closer with Rachel. We would have these late-night phone conversations, me in my room, she in hers, which, by the way, was right next to Patricia's. I was terrified that Patricia might overhear the conversation. I ended up telling Rachel the whole story. We connected about our separate but similar relationships with Patricia. I dug up the old emails, I regurgitated old conversations, and I told her how I really felt during the Patricia dark ages. Rachel had a way of reflecting back what I was telling her and asking specific questions that made me think about everything in new ways. "You said that you felt like you weren't allowed to speak to break up with her, even though you sometimes wanted to. Can you say more about that? And what did it feel like when you would get those emails?" I heard her questions, and I heard myself answering them. I was shocked by the things I was saying. "Did that really happen? I'm not making this up, am I?" It was as if I could see adolescent me sitting on the other side of those emails or lying on my bed, tears streaming down my face, as Patricia told me how much of a coward I was for coming out of the closet. I was completely defenseless. "Stand up for yourself," I wanted to scream at little Daniel. "You deserve better than this." I couldn't go back in time to save younger me, but I could at least do something about it now. It was like having a rusty nail wedged in your foot. I had three options. One was to ignore it altogether. Rusty nail's not so bad, it's just my foot. The rest of my body's fine. The other was also the chance that the nail would just work its way out of my foot. That the friendship would drift apart naturally. Or I could just end it. Just grit my teeth and pull the nail straight out of my foot. Of course it would hurt like hell. But it would finally be gone. There would finally be a chance to heal. Each option was a special kind of horrifying. But what I soon realized was that if I was ever to heal fully from this thing, I had to get that nail out of my skin. And that's exactly what I did. It was painful and emotional, but it was what I needed. Patricia and I haven't spoken in over 2 years. I still have dreams about her. Maybe I always will. And that's okay with me. I don't want to forget.
Stand-up comedian, actor, writer, teacher, and dog lover Jen Waring produces and co-hosts Laugh It Up, Astoria, the first Thursday of every month at QED, a place to show and tell. Switching it up, Dan redefines doing his partner's story justice when he presents Jen's dizzying tale of disastrous past lives. Here is Regressioning, written by Jen Waring and performed by Daniel Mahler.
The psychic wanted to know who wanted to go first, and I couldn't jump on her fast enough. That wasn't even because of the circumstances. I love psychics. I don't always believe a word they say, but they sure are fun. And I do want to believe. Who wouldn't love a guiding voice, an illuminated path, a frickin' clue? So on any day, I would be first. But a psychic at my mom's friend Mary Sharp's Southwestern-themed jewelry party. Save me, psychic. Save me. I wanted to be anywhere else. But my mom wasn't coping well with my impending departure to London in 6 days. My work visa got me 6 months. 6 months of British shenanigans with British fellas and their British accents doing British-y things. I couldn't wait. But my mom could. 6 months was way too long as far as she was concerned. And so, a mother-daughter evening at Mary Sharp's jewelry party was an actual thing. Please, my mom had begged. I just want to spend time with you before you go. Do you remember how hard it was for me, and your father, of course, while you were in London for a semester? Don, tell her about how I cried in the frozen foods because I had no one to buy Brussels sprouts for. My mother is really good at codependent guilt, but she wasn't changing my mind about this because I really love England. I felt it in my soul the last time I was there. I truly couldn't wait to go back and work and live there. My mom, however, was terrified I would never return. Just holding on like a pair of Navajo-inspired hammered silver and feather clip-on earrings. Guilt trip didn't cancel London trip, but it did equal this torture trip. A room full of my mom's friends and bad jewelry and, thankfully, wine coolers. Me, I want to go first. I put down my glass of Boone's Farm, stepped away from the turquoise earrings I was pretending to admire, and stepped into the psychic's parlor, otherwise known as Mary's son Scott's room. They had set up a small table with two chairs on either side and lit some candles that I'm sure were not Scott's, just set between his varsity basketball trophy and senior team photo. They had put a pretty scarf over the card table, and she had her deck of tarot cards already cut, but she looked normal. Like Central New York housewife normal. In capri jeans and an SU t-shirt, overspray hair, and of course, lots of jewelry. She didn't need a turban, just more mystic and less Walmart shopper. I don't think my ass had even hit the chair when she started moaning. She sounded like an overwhelmed hummer, unable to cope with the song when not allowed to just sing out. I asked if she was okay. She exhaled rather ferociously, somewhere between a military woo-saw and a punch in the gut. Oof! Both hands flew up. Oh, you! I can't do a tarot reading with you. They're too much. My first thought was that she was charging me for this crap, and that because my own psychic vibes were so huge or whatever, she couldn't just pick a card without charging me extra. I am pretty intuitive. Can suss out a situation and pick up on the unspoken clues. I'm a mentalist. Not the mentalist, Thomas Jane, just a person who notices. I think a lot of psychics are really just mentalists, looking for that light in your eye when they say, you are thinking of traveling. No light. It doesn't have to be actual traveling, it could be a mental trip, a change of mind or heart. No light. Or a trip you recently took, an actual fall. Light. Ah, I see. Is that how you got that cast on your arm? Your past selves. So many. So strong. I must do a past life regression on you. They have so much to say. More oofsighting. I never had a past life regression, and I was intrigued. Plus, I felt I better say yes or she would explode. She was that wound up. And so I said, sure. Oh, thank you. Your soul has such ties to England, to the United Kingdom area as a whole, going back to feudal times, before even. So strong, this pull of so many versions of yourself, screaming at me in all those accents, and some not in English. So much to say. Have you ever thought of visiting? Ah, a true visionary. Or my mom and Mary were somehow behind this pile of bull. And I was about to fall for it. I mean, I do feel like my soul has ties to England, but am too cheesed out to say it aloud. Certainly not here. And I wasn't about to feed this nonsense. Cue the oof-saw! There you are, in a small, remote English village. Your lover was the lord of the realm. You got to live in the castle and enjoy the protections that he offered until you fell pregnant. For your pregnancy, you returned to your home with care from midwives, paid for by him. You were ecstatic, for the lord's wife had only bore him daughters, and if you had a son, you were set. When you gave birth, it was a boy, but he was lame. Something was wrong with his leg. There was such a fuss when the lord came to your home in the village. You swaddled your son, and when your lover approached, you handed your son to him, ready to accept all that came with providing the lord of the realm with an heir entailed. But when he held him up, unwrapped him to see his manhood, he noticed the boy's leg, misshapen, and in his fury, drowned your son in the town well right in front of you. Wait. What? No wonder this passamy is so loud. She's pissed off. Drown my kid? What a douche. Men suck. I hope passamy kicked his ass. Unfortunately, something in you snapped at that moment, and you lived the rest of your days in a cave at the edge of the village lands. You were crazed. People knew it, avoided you, until you took your own life. Cut to me, stunned. This lady was nuts. Even the party had to be better than this drivel. Why was there even a psychic at a jewelry party? Oh, and here you are. A Scottish woman, maybe Irish, very poor. So, very poor. You and your husband are farmers. You have several children, 6, 7 maybe. Some work the land beside you. It's the Middle Ages, you are in the feudal system. It isn't good. Sweet. Strike two. I have always secretly wanted red hair, though. I bet I was lovely. Pale, freckled, green eyes, like a Nora Roberts historical romance come to life. And I bet her kids were little stunners. My hot Scottish husband. The landowner decides to remove you and your family and replace you with sheep. You need to feed your children, and so your husband moves you closer to the sea, becomes a fisherman. You and the children and he live in a one-room cabin-type structure. You are concerned but strong for them. No, you will let nothing happen to them. But one day, your husband doesn't come home. His ship has gone down off the coast. You are lost. Without him and without means, you become a prostitute. At this, she pauses, knowing, peaceful smile. I just wanted to shout, so? What am I getting from this? Is there a point to regressioning? Regressionism? I assumed it is so I could learn something in the now, right? This was supposed to be better than the stupid jewelry and small talk, and she's killing me here. I wonder what my mom has bought. Oof-sa! Here, you are a man. Go on. An Englishman. A criminal. It's the late 1770s, and you have been convicted. You have a choice, to be sent to the Americas or Australia. You choose America. You fall in with the Sons of Liberty in Boston. Become a speechwriter, anti-Britain. You are a rabble-rouser. Okay, I totally could have been a rabble-rousing speechwriter. And what with all the drowning and the whoring and the that not working out in my other English past selves, of course I would be anti-Britain. Finally, there might be a lesson in all this. But you are not a fighter. True, I'm not. You pack up and head west to a new life in the wild frontier because you know you would be terrible in battle. Yes, I would be terrible in battle. And I have always joked about moving west and finding a cowboy. You make it a day, maybe two. You are excited for your new life, ready for the future when? When? When you are set upon by Native Americans. What? Indians, and scalped, and left for dead. More pausing, more knowing smiles. So I was a whore-turned-town nutjob till I killed myself. A Scottishy Irish mother and prostitute who had less value than sheep. And now I was set upon? This lady might be full of it, but damn, past me self was a hot mess. No wonder I have self-worth issues. I'm sorry, I appreciate you sharing all this with me, but what is the point? These three stories, how does the knowledge of them affect me right now? Well, do you ever start something, something you are excited about, feel good about, and then just stop? Of course I do. I mean, doesn't everyone? Maybe, but in your case, scalping. Scalping? Scalping. Scalping? Scalping. Wait, you're saying that if I start something I'm excited about and then I just stop, it's not because I changed my mind, it's scalping. Until you push past the Indians of your past, survive the scalping, your DNA will always remember and you will always stop. Light. Mary Sharp came banging on the door. It was someone else's turn. Regressions take too long, apparently. My mom's friend Linda was going to take a trip, and my mom was told that I would be just fine on my trip. And while I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall for that, I couldn't stop thinking about, well, my scalp. Off the top of my head, pun intended, of course, I did start things and then just stopped. I had planned to head right to LA after graduation, and then, well, I didn't. I should have told Richard Erickson I loved him before graduation. I didn't. Psychic and the past me's were right. Usually when I felt the risk, I just stopped. I figured it was because I was a chicken, afraid to take the leap and end up drowning. Afraid that whatever I gave birth to would somehow be wrong and thus worthless. Knowing that I could talk a big talk, but when push came to shove, I didn't want to fight for anything. Fear. Scalping. See, that wasn't so bad. Now, don't you just love the matching bracelets I got us? The little turquoise feathers? I guess we won't have to worry about wearing them at the same time for the next 6 months. Out there, on your own, anything could happen. You don't have to go on this trip. You could just stay, you know? Scalping.
That's it. Thanks for joining us for this installment of Know You Tell It.
Visit us on the web at knowyoutellit.com.